puts his hands into his pockets.
Yeah, he knows. I've sort of been coming here lately.
Well, that is so great to hear. I had no idea, she says, and I can tell she's on the brink of tears again.
Okay, everyone, if you could all take a seat, the ceremony will begin shortly,
a man with a microphone says from the raised platform up front. Gammy pulls Harden by the arm before he can protest.
Come sit with the family. You two shouldn't be all the way back here.
He looks back at me and gives me a look that says, help me, but I just smile and follow them to the front. We take a seat next to someone who looks a lot like Karen and I assume is her sister. Harden takes my hand in his, and his grandmother looks down and smiles at our affection before putting her hand on his other one. He stiffens a little, but doesn't remove it. Ken walks to his place, and the look on his face when he spots his son sitting in the front row is indescribable, heartwarming and heartbreaking at the same time. Harden gives him a small smile, which Ken happily returns. Landon stands next to Ken on the stage, but Harden doesn't seem to mind. He would never have agreed to be up there anyway. When Karen enters, a collective sigh sounds through the room. She looks so beautiful as she walks down the aisle. Her face, when she spots her groom, makes me lean into Harden's shoulder. Happiness is radiating off of her, and her smile lights up the tent. Her dress is brushing against the floor, and her cheeks are glowing, adding to the ambiance. The ceremony is beautiful, and I find myself with wet cheeks when Ken's voice cracks into a small sob as he recites his vows to his bride. Harden looks over at me and smiles, removing his hand from mine and wiping my cheeks. Karen makes a beautiful bride, and their first kiss as husband and wife earns cheers and applause from the crowd.
Sap,
Harden teases as I lay my head on his shoulder while the crowd files out. After a bit, we accompany Harden's grandma to the other tent, and I was right. It's even more beautiful than the first one. Up near the walls of this tent are tables draped with white cloth and topped with black napkins and centerpieces of black and white flowers. The ceiling is covered in lanterns just like the yard, and they cast a subtle glow throughout the room, reflecting nicely off the glassware and glossy white plates. The middle of the tent is cleared for what appears to be a dance floor with black and white tiles, and waiters are standing at the ready, waiting for everyone to get their seats.
Now don't you disappear. I want to see you again tonight,
Harden's grandmother says, and leaves us.
This is the fanciest wedding I have been to,
he says, and looks at the white cloth draped across the ceiling. I haven't been to a wedding since I was a child, I tell him, and he smiles.
I like that,
he says, and kisses my cheek. I am not used to his public displays of affection, but I could get used to them quickly. Like what? I ask as he sits down at one of the tables.
That you haven't been to a wedding with Noah,
he says, and I laugh to avoid frowning. Me too, I assure him, and he smiles. The food is delicious. I go for the chicken, and Harden chooses the steak. They set things up in a buffet line to keep it casual, but the food is anything but. I drag a piece of chicken through the creamy sauce and bring the fork to my mouth, but Harden snatches it from me, smiling as he chews the bite. He coughs a little, trying to master chewing and laughing at once. That's what you get for stealing my food, I tease him, popping a new piece into my mouth before he can grab it. He laughs, leaning into my shoulder, and I catch the woman across from us staring. Her expression isn't amused as she watches Harden press his lips against my shoulder. I stare back at her equally harshly, and she looks away. Do you want me to get you another plate? I ask Harden, loud enough for the rude woman to hear my offer. She looks over at the man next to her and raises a brow. He doesn't seem to be paying attention to her, which annoys her further. I smile and place my hand over Harden's. He's as oblivious as the man across the table, and I'm glad.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
I lean down to kiss his cheek and make my way back to the line for food.
Tessa?
A familiar voice calls. I look over to see Mr. Vance and Trevor standing a few feet away. Hello, I smile.
You look breathtaking,
Trevor says, and I thank him quietly.
How are you enjoying your weekend?
Mr. Vance asks me. It's great. I've been enjoying my weeks of late as well, I assure him.
Oh, sure.
He laughs and grabs himself a plate. No red meat, Kimberly says from behind him. He pretends to shoot himself in the temple, and she blows him a kiss. Kimberly and Mr. Vance? Who would have thought? I will have to press her for details on Monday.
Women,
he teases and fills her plate as I do Hardin's.
I'll see you in a few,
he smiles and walks back to his date. She waves at me and gets the young boy on her lap to do the same. I wave back, wondering suddenly if she has a child. Trevor leans in and answers my thoughts.
It's his son.
Oh, I say, and look away from Kimberly. Trevor keeps his eyes on Mr. Vance.
His wife passed away 5 years ago, right after he was born. He hasn't dated anyone until Kim, and they've only been seeing each other for a few months. But he is head over heels for her.
He turns to me and smiles. Well, now I know who to hit up for all the office gossip, I joke, and we both laugh.
Babe,
Hardin says, and wraps his arm around my waist, clearly in an attempt to claim his territory.
Nice to see you. Hardin, is it?
Trevor asks.
Yeah,
Hardin answers shortly.
We better get back to our seats. Landon is looking for you.
He pulls me closer to him, silently dismissing Trevor. I'll see you later, Trevor, I smile politely, and hand Hardin his plate of food as we walk back to the table. Chapter 94. Where's Landon? I ask Hardin when we take our seats. He takes a bite of croissant.
I don't know.
You said he was looking for me.
He was, but I don't know where he is now.
Hardin, you shouldn't talk with your mouth full.
His grandmother appears behind him. I notice him take a deep breath before he turns to her.
Sorry,
he mumbles.
I wanted to see you before I go. God knows when I will see you again. Can you save a dance for your gammy?
She asks, oh so adorably, but he shakes his head.
Why not? She asks him with a smile. I realize now that it wasn't just shock that had Hardin rattled before. There's a tension between them that I can't quite put my finger on.
I'm on my way to get Tessa a drink.
He lies and leaves the table. His grandmother laughs uncomfortably.
Well, he's something, isn't he?
I'm not sure what to say. My first instinct is to defend him, but it seems she is joking. She turns to me sharply.
Is he still drinking?
What? No, I stutter, completely caught off guard. Well, he only drinks every once in a while, I clarify, as I see him walking toward us with two flutes full of pink liquid. He hands me one and I smile and lift it to my lips. It smells sweet when I tip the glass back to take a drink, and the bubbles spritz lightly, tickling my nose. It tastes just as sweet as it smells.
Champagne,
he informs me, and I thank him. Tessa! Karen practically shouts right before she wraps her arms around me. She's changed out of her wedding dress and into a white knee-length wrap dress, not that she looks any less stunning. I am so thrilled that you two came. How was it? She asks. Karen is the only person who would ask how her own wedding was. She is too kind. It was so lovely. It was beautiful, I smile. Hardin puts his hand on the small of my back and I lean into him. I can sense how uncomfortable he is between his grandmother and Karen, and now Ken is making his way over to us.
Thank you for coming,
Ken says to Hardin, and holds out his hand to shake. Hardin obliges and quickly shakes his father's hand. I notice Ken start to lift his arm up to hug Hardin, but he lowers it before following through. Still, Ken's face is full of excitement and joy.
Tessa, you look beautiful, dear.
He hugs me and then eagerly asks,
Are you enjoying yourselves?
I can't help but feel a little awkward around him now that I have a deeper insight into who he was all those years ago.
Yeah, it's a nice setup you've got out here.
Hardin does his best to praise his father. I put my hand on his back and rub small circles to ease him. Hardin's grandmother coughs and looks at his father.
I didn't know that you two were speaking.
Ken rubs the back of his neck, a habit that I suspect Hardin got from him.
Yeah, let's talk about this another time, Mother,
Ken says, and she nods in agreement. I take another drink out of my glass and try not to dwell on the fact that I'm drinking underage in front of adults, in front of the chancellor of my school. A waiter in a black vest walks by with a tray of champagne, and when Ken grabs a flute, I cringe. But he hands the glass to his new bride, and I relax, extremely glad to see that he isn't drinking.
Want another?
Hardin asks me, and I look at Karen. Go ahead. It's a wedding, she tells me, and I smile. Sure, I say, and Hardin leaves to get me another glass. We talk about the wedding and the flowers for a minute, and when Hardin comes back with only one flute, Karen gets concerned and asks him, "You don't like the champagne?"
"Oh, yeah, it's good, but I already had a glass and I'm driving,"
he replies, and Karen looks at him with adoration clear in her brown eyes. She turns to me. "Do you have time to come by this week? I ordered some seeds for the greenhouse." "Yes, of course. I am free any time after 4 all week," I say. The pleased yet astonished look on Gammy's face is obvious as she looks back and forth between Karen and me. "So how long have you two been seeing one another?" she asks Hardin and me.
"A few months,"
Hardin tells her quietly. Sometimes I forget that no one outside of our, well, Hardin's group of friends knows that we despised each other up until 2 months ago. "Oh, so no great-grandchildren for me anytime soon?" she laughs, and Hardin's face flushes.
"No, no. We've only just moved in together,"
Hardin says, and Karen and I both spit champagne back into our glasses at the same time.
"You two moved in together?"
Ken asks. I had not expected Hardin to tell them today. Heck, I hadn't even been sure he would tell them at all, given how he is. I am shocked and a little embarrassed at my reaction, but mostly pleased that he has no problem admitting it.
"Yeah, we moved into Artisan a few days ago,"
he explains.
"Wow, that's a nice place, and closer to Tessa's internship,"
Ken remarks.
"Yeah,"
Hardin says, clearly trying to measure how everyone feels about our bombshell.
"Well, I'm very happy for you, son."
He places his hand on his son's shoulder, and I watch with a neutral expression.
"I never imagined you would be this happy and so at peace." "Thank you,"
Hardin says, and actually smiles.
"Maybe we could come by sometime and see it?"
Ken asks, and Karen's eyes lower. "Ken?" she warns, clearly remembering the time Ken pushed Hardin too far, as I am.
Yeah, I guess you could,"
Hardin says, surprising us all.
"Really?"
Ken asks, and Hardin nods.
"Okay, just let us know when is good for the two of you."
His eyes are slightly glossy. Music begins to play through the tent, and Karen grabs Ken's arm. "That's our cue." "Thank you both so much for coming," she says, and leans in to kiss my cheek. "You have done so much for this family. You have no idea," she whispers in my ear, before pulling away, tears shining in her eyes.
"Time for the bride and groom's first dance,"
a voice announces through the speakers. Hardin's grandmother walks away as well, following the crowd to watch. "You just made their day," I tell Hardin, and kiss his cheek.
"Let's go upstairs,"
he says. "What?" My head is a little fuzzy from the 2 glasses of champagne I just finished.
"Upstairs,"
he repeats, sending that familiar electricity through me. "Now?" I laugh.
"Now."
"But all these people..." He doesn't respond. Instead, he takes my hand and leads me through the crowd and out of the tent. When we get inside the house, he grabs me another glass of champagne, and I try not to let it spill as I rush up the stairs to keep up with him. "Is something wrong?" I ask him as he shuts the bedroom door and locks it.
"I need you,"
he says darkly, and pulls his jacket off. "Are you okay, though?" I ask, my heart already beating out of my chest.
"Yes, I just need a distraction,"
he groans, and steps toward me, grabbing the glass and setting it on the dresser. He takes another step, encircling my wrists in his hands, and then lifting them over my head. I will gladly be his distraction from the overload of everything downstairs. Seeing his grandmother for the first time in years, watching his father get remarried, agreeing to let them come to our apartment. That is a lot for Hardin in such a short period of time. Instead of asking him any questions or pushing him further, I grab him by the collar of his shirt and push my hips out to meet his. He's already hard. Groaning, he lets go of my wrists, allowing me to comb my fingers through his hair. When his mouth moves over mine, his tongue is hot and sweet, with the lingering taste of champagne. Within seconds, he is reaching into his pocket and pulling out a foil packet.
"We've got to get you on birth control so I can stop using these. I want to really be able to feel you."
His voice is husky, and he pulls my lower lip between his, sucking lightly and seductively, making my body crave him even more. I hear him unzip, and he hisses as my hands reach down and push his pants and boxers down to his knees. Hardin's hands go up the front of my dress, and he hooks his long fingers around my panties and pulls them down. I clumsily step out of them, using his arms to steady myself. He chuckles lightly before connecting his lips with my neck. His hands squeeze my hips before he lifts me up and I whimper a little, wrapping my legs around his waist. My hands grip the top of my dress in an attempt to pull it down, but he pleads into my neck.
No, leave it on. This dress is so incredibly sexy. It's so sexy yet white and virginal looking, and fuck, it's so hot. You're so beautiful.
He lifts me up farther, then lowers me onto him. My back is against the smooth door, and Hardin begins guiding me up and down. There is a fever and a desperation in him that I have not seen at this level before, and I feel as though I am ice and he is fire. We are so completely different, yet the same.
Is this okay?
He stutters, his arms wrapped around my back to keep me steady. Yes, I moan. The feeling of him taking me this way, against the door, my legs around his waist, is very intense, but heavenly all the same.
Kiss me,
he begs. I slide my tongue across his lips before his mouth parts, allowing me access. Tugging at his hair, I do my best to kiss him as he moves in and out of me faster and faster. Our bodies are moving vigorously, but our kiss remains slow and intimate.
I can't get enough of you, Tess. Fuck. I love you,
he says into my mouth, and I gasp and moan, that feeling growing in the pit of my stomach. A few grunts escape his lips, and I cry out, both of us reaching our climaxes.
Let go, baby,
he instructs, and I do just that. He leaves his lips pressed against mine, swallowing my moans as he tenses and spills into the condom. With a few heavy breaths, his head falls onto my chest, and he continues to hold me in place for a few seconds, before lifting me and then lowering me to stand on my own feet. I tilt my head back against the door and catch my breath, as he neatly puts the condom back into the wrapper and puts it into his pocket before pulling his pants back up.
Remind me to throw that away as soon as we get downstairs.
He laughs, and I giggle.
Thank you,
he says, and kisses my cheek.
Not for what we just did, but for everything.
You never need to thank me, Hardin. You do as much for me as I do for you. I look into his bright green eyes. Actually, more.
No way.
He shakes his head gently and takes my hand.
Let's go back down before someone comes looking for us.
How do I look? I ask, running my fingers through my hair and wiping under my eyes.
Freshly fucked,
he teases, and I roll my eyes.
You look beautiful.
So do you, I tell him. Almost everyone in the tent is dancing by the time we return, and it seems that our absence has gone unnoticed. As we take our seats, another song begins. I recognize it. Never Let Me Go by Florence and the Machine. Do you want to dance? I ask Hardin, even though I am sure I already know his answer.
No, I don't dance,
he says, and looks over at me.
Unless you want to,
he adds. I am surprised by his offer and thrilled that he would dance with me. He holds his hand out for mine, but really I'm the one who leads us onto the checkered dance floor, moving quickly in case he changes his mind. We stay in the back, a good distance from the crowd.
I don't have a clue what to do,
he laughs. I'll show you, I assure him, and place his hands on my hips. He steps on my feet a few times, but he catches on quickly. Never in a million years would I have even entertained the thought that Hardin would be dancing at his father's wedding.
Sort of a demented song to play at a wedding, isn't it?
He laughs into my ear. Not really. It's sort of perfect, I say, and lean my head on his chest. I am aware that we aren't actually dancing as much as we are just swaying back and forth holding each other, but that's fine with me. We stay that way for the next two songs, which end up being two of my favorites. You Found Me by The Fray makes Hardin laugh as he holds me close to him. The next, a pop song by a boy band, plays, making me smile and him roll his eyes. During both, Hardin gives me some background on his grandmother. She still lives in England, but he hasn't seen or spoken to her since she phoned him on his 12th birthday. She took his father's side during the divorce and defended his drinking, essentially blaming Hardin's mother for everything, which was enough for Hardin to not want to speak to her again. He seems very comfortable sharing this information with me, so I stay quiet, only nodding and humming in acknowledgement of his remarks. Hardin makes a few jokes about how annoying and whiny all the songs being played are, and I laugh at him.
You want to go back upstairs?
He jokes and lowers his hand on my back. Maybe.
I'll have to give you champagne more often.
I move his hands back up to my waist and he pouts, which makes me laugh even more.
I'm actually having a pretty decent time,
he admits. Me too. Thank you for coming with me.
I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
I know he doesn't mean the wedding, but just with me in general. The thought sends warmth through me.
May I cut in?
Ken asks as the next song begins. Hardin frowns and looks at me, then back to his father.
Yeah, but only one song,
he grumbles. Ken laughs and repeats his son's words.
One song.
Hardin lets go of me and Ken's hand goes around my back. I swallow down the uneasy feelings I hold for him. He keeps the conversation light as we dance, and my ill feelings are further muted as we laugh at an obviously drunk couple swaying back and forth next to us.
Would you look at that?
Ken says, his voice full of wonder. I turn to see what he's referring to and hear my own small gasp as I spot Hardin awkwardly swaying back and forth with Karen. She laughs as he steps on her white shoes, and he smiles an embarrassed smile. Tonight has been better than I could have dreamed. After the song ends, Hardin quickly finds his way back to me, and Karen follows. We tell the happy bride and groom that we're going to go, and we all exchange hugs once again. Hardin's being maybe incrementally less stiff than earlier. Someone calls Ken's name, and he nods at them. He and Karen say their final goodbyes and thank us once again for coming to the wedding before disappearing into the crowd. Oh, my feet are killing me, I say. This is the longest I have worn heels in my entire life, and I'm going to need a week to recover.
Would you like me to carry you?
He says in a mocking baby-like voice. No, I giggle. As we are leaving the tent, Trevor walks by with Mr. Vance and Kimberly. Her smile is bright, and she winks at me after looking Hardin up and down. I try to stifle my laugh and end up coughing.
Did you save me a dance?
Mr. Vance teases Hardin.
No, absolutely not.
Hardin laughs back at him.
You're leaving so soon?
Trevor looks at me.
We've been here for a while, actually.
Hardin answers for me and pulls me away from them.
Nice to see you, Vance.
He calls over his shoulder as we walk out of the tent. That was rude, I scold him when we get to his car.
He was flirting with you. I'm entitled to be as rude as I please.
Trevor wasn't flirting. He was just being nice. Hardin rolls his eyes.
He wants you, I can tell. Don't be so naive.
Just be nice to him, please. I work with him, and I don't want any problems, I say calmly. Tonight has been too good a night to ruin over his jealousy. Hardin smirks evilly.
I could always just have Vance fire him.
I can't help but laugh at his cocky response. You're insane, I snort.
Only when it comes to you,
he says, and pulls onto the street. Chapter 95. I love coming home, I proclaim with a squeal as we walk into the apartment, only to then realize it's freezing. Except when you turn the heat off. I shiver and he chuckles.
I still haven't figured that thing out yet. It's too high tech.
As Hardin tries to figure out the thermostat, I grab a blanket off the bed and two from the closet and drop them in a heap on the couch, then go back to the bedroom. Hardin, I call.
Coming.
Can you unzip me? I ask as he comes in, looking frustrated from his handyman moment. I flinch from the coolness of his fingertips against my bare skin. He apologizes, then hastily unzips the material and it drops to the floor. I take my shoes off and find that the concrete floor is freezing as well. Hurrying to the dresser, I grab the warmest pajamas I can find.
Here, let me give you something,
he says, and walks to the closet, pulling out a gray hooded sweatshirt. Thanks, I smile. I don't know what it is about being in Hardin's clothes that I love so much. It's almost as if wearing them brings us closer. I never did this with Noah, except once when I borrowed a sweatshirt while camping with his family. Hardin seems to like when I wear his clothes, too. He watches me slip the sweatshirt over my head with lustful eyes. I notice him struggling to get the tie off, and I pad over to help him. He watches me silently as I pull the thin fabric from around his neck and set it aside before grabbing a pair of thick, fuzzy purple socks that my mother got me for Christmas last year. It dawns on me that Christmas is only 3 weeks away, and I start to wonder if my mother will still want me to come home. I haven't been home since I left for college.
What are those?
Hardin chuckles and flicks the balls of fur at the top of my ankle. Socks. Warm socks, to be exact. I stick my tongue out.
Nice,
he teases, then changes into sweatpants and a sweatshirt. By the time we get back to the living room, the apartment has warmed up somewhat. Hardin turns the television on and lies on the couch, pulling me onto his chest and encasing us in the mound of blankets. I was wondering what you were doing for Christmas, I say nervously. I don't know why I feel shy asking him about this when we already live together.
Oh, well, I was going to wait until next week to bring it up, with everything being so chaotic over the last week. But since you did...
He smiles, his face holding the same nervousness that I feel.
I'm going to go home for the holiday, and I would like it if you would come with me.
Home? I squeak.
To England, to my mother's house.
He looks a little sheepish as he hedges.
I get it if you don't want to. I know it's a lot to ask, and you've already moved in with me.
It's not that I don't want to, it's just... I don't know. The idea of going to another country with Hardin is thrilling, but terrifying. I have never even left Washington.
You don't have to answer me tonight, but let me know soon, okay? I will be leaving on the 20th,
he explains. That's the day after my birthday, I tell him. He moves suddenly and lifts my head up.
Your birthday? Why didn't you tell me it was so soon?
I shrug a little. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, I guess. Birthdays aren't really a big deal to me. My mother used to go all out on my birthdays, making each one special, but not in the last few years.
Well, what would you like to do for your birthday?
Nothing. Maybe we can go to dinner? I don't want to make a big deal out of it.
Dinner. I don't know.
He teases.
A bit extravagant, isn't it?
I giggle, and he kisses my forehead. I force him to watch the new episode of Pretty Little Liars, and we end up falling asleep on the couch pretty quickly. I wake up sweating in the middle of the night. Lifting myself off Hardin, I peel off the sweatshirt and go over to turn the heat down when a small blue blinking light on Hardin's phone piques my curiosity. I pick the phone up off the counter and swipe my finger across. 3 new messages. Put the phone down, Tessa. I have no reason to go through his phone. That's insane. I set it down and walk back toward the couch, only to be stopped by the vibration of another text message arriving. Just one. I will only glance at one. That's not so crazy, right? I know it's insane to be looking through Hardin's messages, but I can't seem to stop myself.
Call me back, Dick.
The message reads. Jace's name covers the top of the small screen. Yep, reading that was a terrible idea. It didn't get me anywhere at all, and now I feel guilty for going through Hardin's phone like a crazy person. But why is Jace texting Hardin anyway?
Tessa?
Hardin's voice croaks, causing me to jump, and the phone slips out of my grasp. It falls to the floor with a crack.
What was that? What are you doing?
He asks through the dark room, the only light being cast from the television. Your phone went off, and I grabbed it. I half lie and scramble on the floor to pick up the phone. The screen now has a small crack along the side. And I cracked the screen, I add. He groans wearily.
Just come back to bed.
I set the phone down and lie back on the couch with him, but I don't fall asleep for a long while. The next morning, I wake up to Hardin trying to move out from under me. I shift against the back of the couch to let him get up, and he grabs his phone off the counter before going to the bathroom. I hope he isn't too pissed about me breaking his screen. If I wouldn't have been so nosy, this wouldn't have happened in the first place. I pull myself off the couch and make a pot of coffee. Hardin's proposal of going to England with him keeps running through my mind. We've already progressed so quickly in our relationship by moving in together at such a young age. Still, I would love to meet his mother and see England with Hardin.
Deep in thought?
Hardin's voice interrupts me as he comes into the kitchen. No. Well, sort of, I laugh.
About?
Christmas.
What about it? You can't figure out what to get me?
I think I'm going to call my mother and see if she would have even invited me for Christmas. I feel bad not at least seeing first, you know? She will be alone. He doesn't look thrilled, but he stays calm.
I understand.
I'm sorry about your phone.
It's fine,
he says and sits at the kitchen table. But then I blurt out, I read a text message from Jace. I don't want to hide things from him, no matter how embarrassing the confessions are.
You what?
It vibrated, and I looked at it. Why was he texting so late anyway?
What did you read?
He asks, ignoring my question. A text from Jace, I repeat. His jaw clenches.
What did it say?
Just to call him back. Why is he getting so worked up? I knew he wouldn't exactly be happy that I looked at his text message, but this is an overreaction.
That's it?
He snaps, which starts to get me annoyed. Yes, Harden. What else would it have said?
Nothing.
He takes a slow sip of coffee like it's all suddenly no big deal.
I just don't like you going through my stuff.
Okay, well, I won't do it again.
Good. I have a few things to do today, so can you keep yourself busy for a while?
What do you have to do? I ask, and instantly regret it.
Jesus, Tessa,
he says loudly.
Why are you always on my case?
I'm not always on your case. I just wanted to know what you were doing. We are in a relationship, Harden, a pretty serious one at that. So why wouldn't I ask where you're going? He pushes his mug away and stands up.
You just don't know when to let shit go is your problem. I don't have to tell you everything, whether we are living together or not. If I would have known you were going to start shit with me today, I would have left before you even woke up.
Wow. Is all I can say before I storm off to the bedroom. But he's hot on my heels.
Wow what?
I should have known that yesterday was too good to be true.
Excuse me?
He scoffs. We had such a great time. You weren't an asshole for once, but you wake up today and bam, you're back to being a jerk. I scramble around the room, picking up Harden's dirty clothes.
You forgot the part where you went through my phone.
Okay, and I am sorry for doing that, but it's honestly not that big of a deal. If there is something on there that you don't want me to see, then there is a bigger problem here, I yell, and shove everything into the hamper. He points an angry finger at me.
No, Tessa, you're the problem. You're always making something out of nothing.
Why did you fight Zed? I counter.
We aren't doing this right now,
he says in a cool tone. Then when, Harden? Why won't you tell me? How am I supposed to trust you if you are keeping things from me? Does this have to do with Jace? I ask, and his nostrils flare. He runs his hands over his face and then up through his hair, leaving it sticking straight up.
I don't know why you can never just mind your own damn business,
he grumbles and walks off. Seconds later, I hear the front door slam and I wipe the angry tears from my cheeks. Harden's reaction to me asking about Jace is gnawing at my stomach the entire time I clean the apartment. He overreacted. There is something he isn't telling me, and I don't understand why. I am fairly certain it has nothing to do with me, but it just doesn't make sense why Harden got so worked up. I have known since the moment I met Jace that he was trouble. If Harden isn't going to give me answers, I will have to go another route. I look out the window and watch as Harden's car pulls out of the parking lot before grabbing my phone. My new source answers on the first ring. Zed? It's Tessa, I say.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, I was wondering if I could ask you something. My voice comes out smaller than I intended it to.
Where is Harden?
He asks, and given his tone, I suspect he holds a small grudge against me for blowing him off after he was so kind to me. He isn't here.
I don't think this is a good idea.
Why did Harden fight you? I ask before he finishes.
I'm sorry, Tessa. I gotta go.
He says, and the call ends. What the hell? I hadn't been 100% sure he would tell me, but that wasn't the reaction I was expecting either. My curiosity is now piqued more than before, and my annoyance is as high as ever. I try to call Harden again, but of course he doesn't answer. Why would Zed act that way? Like he was almost afraid to tell me. Maybe I was wrong and this does have to do with me. I don't know what's going on, but none of this makes sense. I take a step back and reevaluate the situation. Am I overreacting? Harden's frantic expression when I asked about Jace replays in my head, and I'm sure I'm not misreading this. I take a shower to try to calm my nerves and settle my mind, but it doesn't work. This feeling in the pit of my stomach pushes me to come up with another option. When I get out of the shower, I blow dry my hair and get myself dressed while I decide what to do next. I feel a little like Miss Havisham in Great Expectations, plotting and scheming. I had never cared for her character, but suddenly I find myself relating to her. I can now see how love can make you do things that you normally wouldn't, like become obsessive and even a little crazy. Though in reality, my plan really isn't all that crazy or nearly as dramatic as it seems in my head. All I'm going to do is find Steph and ask her if she knows why Hardin and Zed got into a fight, then see what she knows about Jace. The only thing that makes this plan crazy is that Hardin will lose it when he finds out that I called Zed and went to Steph. Now that I think about it, Hardin hasn't taken me around to any of his friends since we moved in together, making it likely none of them actually know about our new living arrangement. By the time I leave the apartment, my thoughts are jumbled and I end up leaving my phone on the counter. It begins to snow as soon as I pull onto the freeway, so it takes me over 30 minutes to get to the dorms. They look the same as I remember. Of course they do. It has only been a week since I left them, even though it seems so much longer. Marching up the hallway, I ignore the rude stare from the bleach blonde who yelled at Hardin for spilling vodka outside her door. That first night that Hardin stayed in my dorm with me seems so distant. Time hasn't made sense since I met him. When I knock on my old door, there's no answer. Of course she isn't here. She's never here. She spends the majority of her time at Tristan and Nate's apartment, and I have no idea where that is. Even if I did, would I go there? I get into my car and try to formulate a new plan while I drive around. This might have been easier if I hadn't forgotten my phone. But just as I'm about to give up on my radical decision to practically stalk my old roommate, I pass Blind Bob's, the biker bar I went to with Steph. Recognizing Nate's car in the lot, I pull in. I take a deep breath before getting out, and when I finally do, the cold air burns my nostrils. The woman in the front smiles at me when I enter, and I'm relieved when I spot Steph's red hair from across the room. If only I had known what was to come. Chapter 96. Nervousness overtakes me as I walk through the smoky bar. Why did I think this was a good idea? Hardin is going to be furious with me, and Steph may just think I'm insane. When she sees me, a big smile fills Steph's face, and she practically shouts, "Tessa, what the hell are you doing here?" before pulling me into a hug. I was looking for you, I say.
Is everything okay? Or did you just miss me?
She laughs. I just missed you. I decide to go with that for now.
I haven't seen you in ages, Tessa.
Nate teases and then hugs me.
Where has Hardin been hiding you?
Tristan appears behind Steph and wraps his arms around her waist. By the way she leans back against him, I know they have worked through the fight over Molly. She smiles.
Come sit with us. It's just us for now.
For now? I wonder if she means that Hardin will be here soon. I follow the three of them to a booth, dreading the answer to that question. A question I choose not to ask and instead order a burger and fries. I haven't eaten all day and it's past 3 PM.
And I'll make sure there is no ketchup, the waitress says with a knowing smile, and walks back to the kitchen.
Clearly she remembers the scene Hardin made the last time I was here. I pick at my manicured fingers as I wait for the waitress to bring me my Coke.
You missed one hell of a party last night, Tessa,
Nate says. He lifts his glass and gulps down the remainder of his beer. Yeah? I smile. The most frustrating part of my relationship with Hardin is that I never know what I'm allowed to tell people. If I were in a normal relationship, I would respond with, "Oh, yeah, we had a great time last night at his father's wedding." But since my relationship is far from normal, I stay quiet.
Yeah, it was wild. We went out to the docks instead of the frat house.
He laughs.
We get away with more at the docks, and we don't have to clean up after.
Oh, does Jace live at the docks? I try to keep my tone neutral.
What? No, the docks are boat docks. He works there during the day, though. He lives close by them.
Oh, I chew on my straw. It was freezing, and Tristan here was plastered and jumped into the cold-ass water. Steph snorts, and Tristan flips her off playfully.
It wasn't too bad. My body was numb the second I hit the water.
He jokes. My food arrives along with Tristan's wings and a round of beers for the three of them.
You sure you don't want a beer? She won't card you,
Nate tells me. Oh no, I have to drive. Thanks, though.
So how's your new dorm?
Steph asks and steals a fry from my plate. My what?
Your new dorm,
she repeats slowly. I don't have a new dorm. Did Hardin tell her I moved into another dorm?
Yeah, you do, because you don't live in mine anymore. All of your stuff was gone, and Hardin said you changed dorms, that your mom flipped out on you or something.
She takes a big swig from her beer. I decide that I don't care how pissed Hardin gets at me. I'm not going to lie. I'm infuriated and embarrassed that he is still hiding our relationship. Hardin and I moved into an apartment, I tell them.
What?
Steph, Nate, and Tristan say at the same time. Yes, last week. We moved in together about 20 minutes from campus, I explain. All three of them are looking at me as if I have grown a second head. What? I ask harshly.
Nothing. It's just... Wow. I don't know. That's just a really huge surprise,
Steph says.
Why?
I snap. I know it isn't fair to direct my anger toward her when it's meant for Hardin, but I can't help it. She frowns and looks like she's pondering something.
I don't know. I just can't picture Hardin living with someone, that's all. I didn't know you two were that serious. I wish you would have told me.
As I am about to ask her what she means by that, Nate's and Tristan's eyes dart to the door, then back to me. When I turn around, I see Molly, Hardin, and Jace standing in the doorway. Hardin shakes some snow from his hair and wipes his boots on the straw mat. I turn around quickly, my heart beating out of my chest. There are too many things going on at once. Molly is with Hardin, which pisses me off beyond words. Jace is with Hardin, which confuses the hell out of me. And I just told everyone that we moved in together, which they seem unsettled by.
Tessa.
Hardin's voice is angry from behind me. I look up at him, and his face is twisted in anger. He is trying to control it, I can tell, but it's about to boil over.
I need to talk to you,
he says through clenched teeth. Right now, I say, trying to sound casual but hard-edged.
Yes, now,
he answers and reaches out to grab my arm. I quickly climb out of the booth and follow him to the corner of the small bar.
What the hell are you doing here?
He says quietly, his face inches from mine. I came to hang out with Steph. Not exactly a lie, but not the truth either. He calls me out.
Bullshit.
He is struggling to keep his voice down, but we've already drawn the attention of more than a few patrons.
You need to go,
he tells me. Excuse me? I retort, stealing one of his famous lines.
You need to go home.
Home where? Back to my new dorm? I challenge. The color drains from his face. Yep, I told them. I told them that we live together. How could you not? Do you know how stupid that makes me look? I thought we were past you trying to keep me a secret.
I wasn't,
he lies. I am so sick of the secrets and deception, Hardin. Every time I think we are doing so great...
I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to keep it a secret. I was just waiting.
Hardin's thoughts seem jumbled. I can almost see the internal battle being waged behind his green eyes. His eyes frantically scan the room, and his panic worries me. I can't keep doing this. You know that, don't you? I tell him.
Yeah, I know.
He sighs and pulls his lip ring between his teeth and runs his hand through his damp hair.
Can we go home and talk about this?
He asks, and I nod. I follow him back to the booths where everyone is seated.
We are going to go,
Hardin announces. Jace gives a sinister grin.
So soon?
Hardin's shoulders tense.
Yeah,
he answers. Back to your apartment? Steph asks, and I shoot a glare at her. Not now, I silently scream at her. You're what? Molly cackles. I could have gone the rest of my life without seeing her again, really. Their apartment. They live together, Steph says in a sing-song voice. I know she is only trying to shove it down Molly's throat, and usually I would applaud her for it, but I'm too angry at Hardin to focus on Molly. Well, well, well. Molly taps her long crimson nails on the table. That's very interesting, she says, staring at Hardin.
Molly?
He warns. I swear I see panic flash across his face. She raises an eyebrow. You're really taking this whole thing a little far, aren't you?
Molly, I swear to God, if you don't shut the fuck up...
What thing? What is he taking too far? I can't help but ask.
Tessa, go outside,
he commands, but I ignore him. No, what is he taking too far? Tell me, I yell. Wait, you're in on it, aren't you? She laughs and continues. I knew it! I told Jace you knew, but he wouldn't believe me. Hardin, you owe Zed some big bucks for this. She throws her head back and stands up. Hardin's face is completely pale. All the blood seems to be drained from his entire body. My head is swimming and I'm so confused. I briefly glance at Nate, Tristan, and Steph, but they are all focused on Harden. New what? My voice is shaky. Harden grabs my arm and tries to pull me away, but I jerk out of his grip and move over to stand in front of Molly. Don't be stupid with me. I know you know. What did he do? Split the money with you? She asks. Harden reaches for my hand and his fingers are ice cold.
Tessa.
I jerk away and stare at him, my eyes wide.
Tell me. What is she talking about? I yell to him.
Tears threaten my eyes and I struggle to keep down all the emotions storming through me. Harden astounds me by opening his mouth and then closing it again.
Oh my God, you really don't know? Oh, this is amazing. Everyone pull up a seat, she mocks.
Molly, don't,
Steph says. You sure you want to know, princess? Molly continues, giving me a triumphant smile. I can literally hear the blood pounding behind my ears, and for a second I wonder if everyone else can too.
Tell me, I demand.
She tilts her head slightly, but then pauses. No, I think Harden should tell her. And she starts giggling, sliding her tongue ring between her teeth, making the most horrendous rattling, worse than nails on a chalkboard. Chapter 97. Everything is happening too fast for me to comprehend. I'm confused, and when I look around the room, I see that I'm surrounded by people who have taunted me no matter how hard I tried to fit in with them, and I know that I can't trust a single one of them. What's going on? Why is Harden just standing there? What's happening?
I second that.
Jace chimes in and lifts his beer in salute.
Go on, Harden. Tell her.
I will tell you outside,
Harden says, his voice low. I look into his brilliant eyes, which seem wild with desperation and confusion. I don't know what is going on, but I do know I don't want to go anywhere with him. No, you tell me here, in front of them so you can't lie. My heart is already aching, and I know that I am not prepared for whatever he is getting ready to tell me. He pauses, fidgeting with his fingers before he speaks.
I'm sorry.
He holds his hands out in front of him.
Tessa, you have to remember that this was way before I even knew you.
His eyes are begging for mercy. I don't trust my voice, and I barely open my mouth when I speak. Tell me.
That night, that second night, the second party you came to when we played Truth or Dare, and Nate asked if you were a virgin.
He closes his eyes as if to gather his thoughts. Oh, no. If it was possible for my heart to sink even lower, it would have. This isn't happening. This can't be happening. Not right now. Not to me.
Go on,
Jace says, and leans forward like this is the best thing he's ever seen. Harden shoots him daggers, and I know that if Harden weren't in the middle of single-handedly destroying our relationship, he would kill that vile man on the spot.
You said you were, and that gave someone an idea.
Gave who the idea? Molly interrupts.
Me. Gave me the idea.
He admits. His eyes never leave mine, which doesn't make this any easier.
That it could be fun to make a bet.
His head falls, and tears pour from my eyes.
No,
I choke and take a step backward. Confusion rams into my already jumbled thoughts, disrupting any attempt to make sense of them, to make sense of what I'm hearing. Confusion is quickly replaced by a burning mixture of pain and anger. All of the memories flooding through me pile and piece together. Stay away from him. Be careful. Sometimes you think you know people, but you don't. But Tessa, I need to tell you something. All of the small remarks that were made by Molly, Jace, and even Harden himself play over and over. There was always something in the back of my mind, a feeling that I was missing something. All of the air seems to be sucked out of the small room, and I find myself almost gasping as the reality of all this sets in. There were so many clues. I was just too blinded by Harden to see them. Why would he take it this far? To have me live with him? You knew? I turn to Steph. I can't look at Harden any longer.
I was going to tell you so many times, Tess.
she says, her eyes brimming with guilty tears.
I didn't believe it when he claimed he won, even with the condom.
Jace snickers, enjoying the show. Right? Me either. The sheets, though. I mean, how can you deny blood on the sheets? Molly laughs. The sheets. That's why they were still in his car. I know I should be saying something, anything, but I can't find my voice. Everything is moving around me. People in the bar are eating and drinking, not noticing the naive girl 10 feet away from them having her heart shattered. How is it possible that time still moves as I stand here watching Tristan bow his head, watching Steph cry, and most of all, watching Harden watch me?
Tessa, I'm so sorry.
He takes a step toward me, but I can't even move my feet to run away like I need to. Molly's harpy voice breaks through the air. You know, there's a sort of drama here that everyone has to appreciate. I mean, remember the last time we were all here and Steph gave Tessa that ridiculous makeover and Harden and Zed were trying to battle over who took her back to her room? She laughs, then continues. Then Harden showed up to your room, right? With that vodka. You thought he was drunk. Do you remember when I called him when he was there? For a moment, she looks at me like she actually expects I'll answer her. But really, he was supposed to win the bet that night. He was pretty cocky about it, but Zed kept saying you wouldn't give it up that quick. I guess Zed was right, but you still gave it up quicker than I thought you would, so I suppose it's a good thing I didn't bet any money. Molly's terrible sounds and Harden's eyes are the only thing in the bar. I have never felt this way before. This level of humiliation and loss is worse than I could have ever imagined. Harden has been playing me this entire time. This was all a game to him. All the hugs, the kisses, the smiles, the laughs, the I love yous, the sex, the plans. And fuck if this doesn't burn like nothing else in the world. He had every move planned, every night, every single detail, and everyone knew except me. Even Steph, who I thought was becoming a friend. I glance at him, allowing myself a moment of weakness during the shock, and I wish I hadn't. He's just standing there. Standing there like my entire world isn't crashing around me, and he hasn't completely humiliated me in front of everyone. You'd be happy to know that you were worth a pretty penny, though, even though Zed tried to bitch out a few times. But with Jace, Logan, and Zed's money, I hope he at least bought you dinner, Molly says, laughing. Jace finishes his beer and howls.
I'm only disappointed that I missed the infamous I love you announcement in front of everyone. I heard that was a killer. Shut the fuck up.
Tristan surprises everyone by yelling. If I wasn't numb, he may have surprised me too.
Fuck you guys. She's already had enough.
Harden takes another step.
Baby, please say something.
And with his little baby plea, my brain finally connects with my mouth.
Don't you fucking dare call me that.
How could you do this to me? I can't. I have so many things in my head to say, but they just won't come out.
And I won't say anything because that's what you want.
I sound much more confident than I feel inside. Inside I am burning and my heart is on the floor, underneath Harden's boot.
I know I messed up,
he begins.
You messed up? You messed up? I scream. Why? Just tell me why. Why me?
Because you were there,
he says, and his honesty only breaks me further.
And a challenge. I didn't know you, Tessa. I didn't know I would fall in love with you.
His mention of love carries with it the opposite feeling than it has the past few weeks, and I can taste the bile in the back of my throat.
You're sick. You're fucking sick!
I scream and rush to the door. This is too much for me. Harden's hand wraps around my arm and I jerk away, turning and slapping him, hard. The pain in his expression gives me the most painful satisfaction.
You ruined everything, I scream. You took something from me that wasn't yours, Harden. That was meant for someone who loved me. Loved me truthfully. It was his, whoever he is, and you took that. For money? I ruined my relationship with my mother for you. I gave up everything. I had someone who loved me, someone who wouldn't hurt me the way you did.
You are disgusting.
I do love you, Tessa. I love you more than anything. I was going to tell you. I tried to get them not to tell you. I never wanted you to find out. That's why I was out all night, getting them to agree not to say anything. I was going to tell you soon, now that we live together, because then it wouldn't matter.
I have no control over the words tumbling from my lips. Are you... you... Oh my God, Harden! What the hell is wrong with you? You think going around convincing people not to tell me is okay? The fact that I wouldn't know would make it all okay? You thought that if we lived together, I would let this go? That's why you were so determined for my name to be on the lease! Oh my God, you are sick! Every small detail that made me think twice since I met Harden all points to this. It was so obvious. That's why you went and got my stuff for me from my room, because you were afraid Steph would tell me. Everyone in the bar is staring, and I feel so small. So broken and small. What did you do with the money, Harden?
I...
He begins, then stops. Tell me, I demand.
Your car. The paint. And the deposit for the apartment. I thought if I was going to tell you so many times once I knew it wasn't just a bet anymore. I love you. I loved you the entire time, I swear it.
He says. You kept the condom to show them, Harden. You showed them the sheets. The bloody fucking sheets! I wrap my hands in my hair and tug at it. Oh my God, I'm such an idiot. While I was reliving every detail of the best night of my life, you were showing your friends the sheets.
I know. I don't have any excuse, but you have to forgive me. We can figure this out,
he says. And I laugh. A real laugh. Despite my tears, I find myself laughing. I'm losing my mind. This scene isn't playing out like in the movies. I'm not holding myself together. I'm not handling the news elegantly with a simple gasp or a single tear trailing down my cheek. I am crying, pulling at my own hair, and am barely able to control my emotions and form a full sentence. Forgive you? I laugh madly. You have ruined my entire life. You know that, don't you? Oh, of course you do. That was your plan the entire time, remember? You promised you would ruin me, so congratulations, Harden. You have. What should I give you? Money? Or should I find another virgin for you? He shifts a little, as if to block out my view of the others at the table.
Tessa, please. You know I love you. I know you do. Let's go home, please, and I will tell you everything.
Home? That isn't my home. It never has been. We both know that. I try for the door again. I am so close.
What can I do? I'll do anything,
he begs. With his eyes still focused on mine, he bends down. I'm confused for a second before I realize he is getting on his knees in front of me. You? Nothing. There is nothing you can do for me anymore, Harden. If I knew what to say to hurt him as badly as he has hurt me, I would. And I would repeat it 1,000 times, just so he would know how it feels to be so completely blindsided and ripped apart. I take off for the door, taking advantage of Harden's position on his knees. As soon as I reach the door, I crash into someone. I look up to find Zed, his battered face still recovering from the injuries that Harden caused.
What's wrong?
He asks and grabs my elbows. Then his gaze travels behind me to Harden, and realization fills his eyes.
I'm sorry,
he says, but I ignore him. Harden is coming, and I have to get the hell away from this bar. From him. The freezing air whips my hair in front of my face as soon as I get outside. I welcome the feeling, hoping it will cool the burning inside me. Snow has blanketed my car and the streets. Zed's voice calls from behind me.
You can't drive, Tessa.
I keep trudging through the snow, across the parking lot. Leave me alone. I know you were in on it. You all were, I scream and dig for my keys.
Let me take you home. You are in no condition to drive in this storm,
he says. As I open my mouth to scream at him, Harden walks outside. I look at the person I once thought was the love of my life, who I thought would make every day after we met special and wild and free, and then I look at Zed. Okay, I say.
The click of Zed's car being unlocked is my cue to get in as fast as I can. The second Harden realizes that I'm leaving with Zed, he runs toward the car. His face twists in anger, and I hope for Zed's sake he gets into the car before Harden reaches us. Zed jumps in and takes off. I look over and watch Harden fall to his knees for the second time tonight.
"I am so sorry, Tessa. I had no idea it would get that out of hand,"
he starts, but I cut him off. "Don't talk to me. I can't stand to hear anymore. I can't take it. I'm sick to my stomach, and the pain of Harden's betrayal is cutting at me, making me weaker and weaker by the moment. I'm convinced that if Zed speaks, there will be nothing left of me. I need to know why Harden did what he did, but I'm honestly terrified what will happen if I hear it, all of it. I haven't felt pain like this before, and I'm not sure how to handle it, or if I can at all." Zed nods, and we drive in silence for a few minutes. I think of Harden, of Molly, of Jace and the rest, and something in me shifts. Something makes me braver. "You know what?" I turn to him. "Do talk to me. Tell me everything. Every single detail." With worried eyes, he searches my face for a moment, and then, realizing he has no choice, says a quiet,
"Okay,"
as we turn onto the freeway.
After was written by Anna Todd and read by Elizabeth Louise. Post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, technical director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Jessica Escalona. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. After is available in print from Gallery Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.